Good morning, everyone. Good morning. We're launching the sexuality series, and the full series is on these posters around campus, so check it out. You have to get close to read it, and that's intentional. So you can see that we're launching today with Dr. Carolyn Stauffer, and then this Friday with author and pastor blogger Deborah Hirsch. Full four events with her. Chapel and a 4 p.m. lecture that goes a lot deeper in the themes that she opens up in chapel, and then an 8 p.m. questions after dark hosted by Scott Ayer from Res Life. Carolyn has been teaching at EMU for 6 years as assistant professor in applied social sciences and an MA in organizational leadership, as well as co-director of the MA in biomedicine. Her research interests include gender-based violence, social capital, resilience and trauma, and intersectionality theory applications. We can't think of a better prepared person to open the sexuality series, especially because our focus is sexuality and spirituality. And so we've welcomed many people from off campus to this stage. Let's welcome with the same enthusiasm Dr. Carolyn Stauffer.
Thank you. Well, good morning. I get the privilege of talking about one of the most exciting things in life. And that is something that brings me joy and brings me anticipation and brings me passion. Sex, sexuality, sexual expression is a huge part of all of our lives, and it can be very, very life-giving. It can also be very, very death-dealing. And so in light of that, what I'd like to do is to open in prayer. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to ask you to keep your eyes open, and we're actually going to play a song, and I'm going to pray during that song.
Thank you. victim of the fall, but am soon returning. Soon returning.
Your light.
Your love's the warmest place the sun ever shines. My morning yearning. Morning yearning. Morning yearning.
Well, today I want to talk about sex, sexuality, and sexual expression. And my title is Sex and Millennials, hashtag New Scripts. Well, what I want to do is really share with you what I consider to be common ground that we all share. We all have these yearnings. There's not a single person here, whether you're with somebody or not, or whatever your story is, where you've come from, where you're going, this is common ground. These yearnings are something that we all share. I also want to talk about it in terms of common sense sexuality, and I also want to speak about common good sexuality. Now, I'm going to do this in terms of what I call a translational gospel. And what I mean by that is that I think that Jesus always used parables. He used stories that made sense to everybody. It was the everyman approach or every woman approach. And so I'm going to use the lens of four different stories for four different students whose lives have intersected with mine. And each of their stories builds on a sense of a sort of model that I've been thinking about and working on across time. And that starts with the story of the individual. How do our sexual expressions actually validate our individual lives? How do they make us more whole people? Second of all, our primary partnerships in life, are our sexual expressions adding value to the sanctity of those points of connection? I recently read an article by a woman who is a graduate of Princeton, and she says this. She says, students want more than consent. They want recognition, intimacy, love, respect, validation, friendship, deep connection. They want to feel safe and unafraid to be vulnerable with another person. Are the formats that we choose creating that kind of nonviolent form of sexual expression? Third level is community. Many times we think about the individual being accountable to the community. Is the community accountable to the individual? Last but not least, the fourth level is transcendence. And this is where we think about how our sexual expressions should actually draw us nearer, closer to who we are as divinely created and divinely made and divinely celebrated individuals. So four stories. Let me start with the first one. This is a story of a young man who would always come in tired to class in the morning. It was an 8 o'clock class, and he would come in tired. And so I asked him one time, I said, so is it like your crazy school schedule, like your classes or whatever? And he said, no, it's actually that I have a lot going on in my life. I said, like what? He's like, well, maybe I'll tell you about it sometime. So he came over to my house. I was having an event where I was having the whole class over, and he came about an hour early, so he was at my bar chopping up vegetables with me for the dinner that we were going to share with the rest of the students. And I asked him again, I said, what's with your schedule? You know, you always look sort of on the downside. And he said, well, yeah, you want to hear about my schedule? This is my schedule. My schedule is I get up in the morning, I do about 2 hours of porn, I come to your class, I do a little bit of reading afterwards, do about another 45 minutes of porn, have lunch, usually try to do some track and field running, doing all that kind of stuff, do some homework, have some dinner, do about another hour and a half of porn and go to sleep. And he says, and that's not working for me. I said, okay, what's that about? He said, well, you know, I'm a pastor's kid, and so there are a lot of voices that live in my head. And this has become like a major addiction for me. And I said, well, what do you think that addiction is really about? He said, well, I'm wondering the same thing. And I said, my experience is that our individual expressions of sexuality are really about our journey to self, right? It's really about trying to understand who we are as sexual beings. The problem and the irony is that many times we create closed loops around that cycle, and we don't let anybody else in. It's sort of like Gollum, you know, in The Lord of the Rings. What was the problem with the ring? It wasn't the powers of the ring, right? Our sexuality has huge powers. It was the fact that Gollum wanted it all for himself. It's mine, 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 right? So we started a conversation, he and I, together, and started looking at the fact that a lot of times our personal habits, when they become addictions, are pseudo-satisfiers. What do I mean by pseudo-satisfiers? It's sort of like a sugar kick, right? It takes you up and then brings you down really fast. It doesn't give you any nutritional value, you know? It's all about imagined communities instead of real communities. So if we go back to the assumption that we find ourselves through other people, then it's about populating our lives with conversations that help ground us in that sense of community. 4 years later, I met the same young man. It was somebody else's wedding. He had this honking big ring on his finger, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh, she got married. This is a big deal. He said, yeah, and I've been thinking for a while now about what you said to me about the journey to self, Carolyn. And he said, I've done a number of things. First thing I did is I let other people into this circle, and I created a sort of open loop here, and I got together with some other guys at JMU, and we started talking about our lives, what's going on, what we're exposed to, what we're consuming. And he said, that's the first thing I did. The second thing I did is, he said, I got on a regimen where over 6 months, he was like really excited. He was like, over 6 months, I sort of like started cutting down on the hard porn and then the soft porn and then the bathing suits and then the, you know, internet and, you know. And he said, I've got myself on this schedule and I'm really feeling good about that. And I said, well, look, you know, there's nothing, I don't have any problems with self-pleasuring and understanding how your body works and all that. Yeah, that's what they're here for. On the other hand, addictions is when something owns you. Back to the analogy of the ring, right? Closed loop thinking. And so he said, yeah, so I got into this regimen, and then he looked down at his ring and he said, and now I'm with this amazing woman. And you know what? I'm starting to regulate by her. He said, you know, there was a sort of artificial cycle that was created when I was regulating just according to my own needs and greeds. And all of a sudden I have to regulate my sexual expression according to somebody else. That opened the loop for me. Open loop. Open loop. Second story. On the partnership level, I had a young woman that came to me, and she said, she was real intense. Like, she said, Carolyn, there's stuff that I just do compulsively. Like, I don't know what to do about this. I keep going down to a particular location on campus and some of the house parties and so on, and I keep hooking up, and it's just like these random people. I don't even know who they are. Like, oh, what's this about? She said, and then she looks at me directly. It's one of those eye-on-eye things, and she said, is that a sin? I said, well, how long has this been going on? She said, about a year and a half. And I said, well, how about this? How about you and I start meeting? We'll start processing this together. And usually things that take a year and a half to get into take at least sometimes that long to get out of as well. So we met over the next year and a half, and it turns out her story is that her grandfather sexually abused her and used to promise her that he would pay for her university fees. Well, he didn't pay up back then, and he's not paying up, wasn't paying up now either. But slowly across time, she started making the link between those experiences and her behavior now. By the end of a year and a half, she looked at me and she said, Stauffer, remember that question I asked you a while back? I'm thinking it's sort of her words, hell of a destructive, isn't it? I said, okay, you've come to your own answer. And this is really about, many times there's two different things that I find as I meet and I talk with students. There's two things. There's many times it's what I call injurious absences that cause relationships to form in unhealthy ways. It's, you know, the trauma field talks about many times, you know, sense of commission in the sense of things that have happened to us, you know, that people have perpetrated against us. But there's also absences sometimes that are profoundly injurious to us. Everybody else got invited to the prom and I didn't. I haven't been able to connect in the ways that I want. So whenever I do get a chance, it's like, boom, right? Injurious absences, or what I also call sort of premature awakening. Sometimes our yearnings are fed in ways that are premature, not necessarily ways that add values to our lives. So she started thinking about that. And I was talking to her also about the story of the woman at the well. When Jesus meets the woman at the well, he encounters her and he basically calls her out on something. He says, Carolyn Stauffer language, you know, girlfriend, what's with the serial relationships? What's going on here? These are becoming toxic for you. Let's have a look at that, right? And so it was the same thing. It was holding up the mirror and saying, like the prophet Nathan did to David, what he did was he said, these are your values. What do you see? Will these build into the future that you want to go towards? I don't know if that story has a happy ending. I don't know about that young woman. I haven't seen her since that time. But I tell you what, she did some of her homework and some of her thinking and some of her linking. And that's really about holding up that mirror in ways that actually can create the possibility for more whole relationships. We should go into relationships not because of absences, but because of our capacity to be present. Our capacity to be deeply present and meaningfully present. And when we have all this stuff in our backpack, it's really hard to be present because you're really distracted at the end of the day. Third story. I had a woman who actually stayed with us for, a young woman who stayed with us for a while, and I remember one afternoon, she was all angry. She was just like, it wasn't just hangry, it was like all, I was like, what's up? And she said, well, I'm just so angry at myself. I'm just so angry. It's like every time I almost get close to somebody, I just always self-sabotage. I don't know what I do with these guys. It's like I'm always just like almost there, and then I just run away. Like I set it up so that they hate me, or I don't know, or, you know. And so she was really, really full of rage. And then all of a sudden, she just started crying. And then it got into this, like, primal crying. Has anybody ever heard primal crying? It sounds almost like an animal. And it's just, it's really difficult. It's just like this sobbing. It's a noise that you pick up only on occasion. In other words, it's a real source of pain. And so I sat with her. I remember I was sitting on the floor, and I sort of said, okay, you want to tell me what this is about? And she said, well, you know, I think I'm putting it together right now. My parents, when I was growing up, there was a lot of violence in the home. And it was never really safe. And my father was alcoholic. I was always walking around on eggshells. And I think I've put together in my head closeness to people. I've conflated intimacy with pain. So I set up life situations to reenact that. Freud called that compulsive reenactment, right? Because we know inside, so we set these circumstances up that always cause us to fail, right? So the next 7 weeks, I met with her on a weekly basis, and we went through a process of naming the griefs from the background that she had carried with her. It was really interesting. She talked about a loss of play. Because of having to walk on eggshells all the time, children only play when they feel safe. Now think about that. Children only play when they feel safe. And she hadn't felt safe enough to play, right? She talked about a loss of a sense of safety. So we spent a week on that. We, you know, went through a number of different things. By the end of the 7 weeks, she said, okay, I feel ready now. That story has a happy ending. She's engaged now, about ready to get married. I'm going to go to the wedding. I'm really excited for her. But she did her work in that regard. And I think about the story of the woman caught in adultery. And this is where Jesus spoke truth to power in the sense of actually calling out the institutions of patriarchy, of privilege. And many times, again, on the community level, We need to think about, like I said at the beginning, not just the individual being accountable to the community, but the community being accountable to the individual. So many times the major institutions in our lives have let us down. Accountability. The places that are supposed to be safe become locations of predation. This is the case also here. How do we make these spaces more like lattices? I call it the lattice principle. I spent a long time in Southern Africa, and if there's one thing that I learned is that the baskets that were the most useful were the ones that were loosely latticed. The ones who were too tightly latticed actually didn't let anything in, and so they were hard to put stuff in because they had such a firm structure, right? And they didn't actually mold to the shape of whatever you were putting in them. But the ones that were semi-permeable, sort of like our skin, we talk about our epithelial cells being our biggest organ on our body precisely because they cover the surface area the most, right? And our epithelial cells, our skin, is semi-porous. It lets some things in, but it keeps other things out. As communities creating new scripts, we need to be able to decide what is that which is destructive in terms of our community practices and our capacity to keep people safe, and what are the things that we should let in. Fourth story. I was at a big event where I was talking on a similar topic, and a young man came up to me afterwards, and he said, okay, here's my story. I'm in a long-distance relationship. It's long-term. I only see her like twice a year. We're trying to deal with the sexual aspects of it. So we started the sexting thing, and so, you know, we send each other like sexual messages whenever one of us has the urge. You know, and then he said, but since then it's gotten a little bit more in depth. So then we were sending each other stills of each other's body. And then now it's like live streaming our own pictures of ourselves to each other. And he says, and you know, I'm not quite sure how I feel about this. Like, what do you think? And so, you know, it's the first time I had thought about that kind of issue. You know, I've heard a lot of stuff, but it hadn't been that yet. And so I did the Dr. Phil thing, and I sort of said, so is that working for you?
Yeah.
And he said, actually, it's not working for me. It's getting sort of stale. You know, it was like really exciting at the beginning, but now it's like, yeah, whatevs. Like, what is that? And so I said, well, you know, many times when we're trying to connect with people, it's much more about actually developing other parts of our relationships too, to balance that space of sacred sexual expression. I said, maybe if you started getting to know about other parts of her life. He said, yeah, no, we don't talk anymore. We sext more, but we text less. He's like, I don't really know what's going on with her life. So, and when I think about us and our capacity to engage with God, to grow our connections with God through our sexual expressions, it's always an invitation to grow all of who we are, to balance every part of who we are. And my husband's been talking to me recently about the story of the Transfiguration. You know, this guy was trying to get image and connection across space and time. Well, Christ did that too with the Transfiguration. And it was really, in essence, a story about taking who Jesus was across time and across space. And I think that who we are as sexual beings should do exactly that. When I said it was life-giving, I meant it's life-giving, right? It's something that actually carries us from where we've come from into another part of who we can be. So this is what I've been thinking about over the last number of weeks. And I really think that this is about a new script of multiplying. We need to have new texts, new scripts, new possibilities here on campus that will live into this sense of common sense, common good, and common ground, sexuality. And how can we do that? And I think that's one thing that I've been wanting to just spend prayer in and prepare my spirit for saying, you know, I don't just want a yearning for a new morning. I want a yearning for a new season. a new season where this campus will be known, if I can appropriate the words of MLK and to say, I have a dream where this campus will be known for nonviolent sexual expression, right? For common good sexual expression, for sacred and beautiful and honored sexual expression. That is my dream. I heard just the other day that the New York Times ran an article, and it said this, that it's not the cynics who create the future, it's the realists who dream that create the future. And that is my dream. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a little call and response here. And when I say sex and millennials at EMU, you guys respond with hashtag new scripts. Okay? Got it? Sex and millennials at EMU.
Hashtag new scripts.
Sex and millennials at EMU.
Hashtag new scripts.
Sex and millennials at EMU.
Hashtag new scripts.
Can't hear you.
Hashtag
new scripts. Gotta love it. I'm going to close today with a song. It's a wonderful song. And for any of you that are yearning for a new season in your life, not just a new morning, I think you will resonate with this song.
This next song is called Spring to Come. I guess it's about holding steady when the dark clouds kind of come over your brain and your mind and your heart, and you feel like you're in a deep, dark hole. And sometimes you just need to kind of remind yourself that winter passes, and it'll all be okay. To go.
is only like anthem. After a lonely, long night comes the sun. Out of the darkness, only like anthem. After a lonely, long night comes the sun. Out of the darkness, only like anthem. After a lonely, long night comes the sun.
Being here today.